Okay, welcome everyone. My name is Molly Marin. I am the webinar coordinator for the New York State Technical Assistance Center for RTI. A few reminders before we get started today. All upcoming professional development opportunities are available on our webpage, nysrti.org. There's registration. We do have some additional webinars this spring, as well as some on-site in-person training. So please check those out. A copy of today's PowerPoint is available on our webpage under webinars and then under today's webinar title. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we very much appreciate the feedback. It will come via email to you as well, but if you can complete that, again, we do look at that every week. We are very pleased to have back with us Dr. Catherine Stahl to present the second webinar in our Strand 13 series, Using an Assessment Audit to Create a Lean and Efficient RTI Assessment System for Grades K through 3. Today's topic is K through 3, Conducting the Audit, Who Does What and Why. Dr. Stahl is a Clinical Associate Professor of Literacy at New York University. Dr. Stahl studies the effective instruction of reading in the elementary years. She is committed to improving student achievement and school effectiveness, especially in urban settings. She is currently the director of the NYU Literacy Clinic. For over 25 years, Stahl has taught in high-poverty public elementary and middle school classrooms. The questions that she researches stem from those experiences and from current classroom observations. Her research examines reading acquisition and reading comprehension. She has written 5 books related to literacy instruction. She earned her Ed.D. in Reading Education from the University of Georgia in 2003. And at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Stahl.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Molly. Good afternoon, everyone. So I look forward to our second session on the assessment audit for those of you who are working in grades kindergarten or pre-K through third grade. As always, first, our agenda for today is going to be to walk through the assessment audit form, and we will actually talk and do some examples of particular tests and what might be likely entries for something like a first grade assessment audit. So we'll actually walk through each of those columns. Then we will also talk about how can we, in our assessment audit process, ensure inclusiveness and comprehensiveness, and making sure that everyone's voice is heard, making sure that there's adequate discussion, and that all faculty members that are involved in any kind of assessment process for literacy are included in this assessment audit process. And then we will finish up with next steps in getting the big picture of what our audit process has displayed for us and how to proceed after we have collected the information. So as always, I would like to know a little bit about who you are so that I can try to target some of the conversation to what your needs are. So if you will please tell me and select or vote for your role. So this looks very interesting. We have a lot of interventionists, and many administrators, school psychologists, and special educators, and some other folks as well. So this will certainly help shape the conversation and kind of the information that I am sharing with you. So this is very helpful. Okay, Molly. And now if you can also tell me about what grade levels you are responsible for or that you work with. Okay, that I suspected that based on those roles. Okay, and we do have somebody working in grade 2, but primarily most of the people do work with all the grade levels. And this is actually great for this process, so that you will have an overview and you will be able to share your expertise in each of the grade levels. Okay, Molly. So as we continue to work on the assessment audit, All of the resources that I will be talking about with you today are available. The audit form is available on the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center website. And it might be helpful for you simply in terms of the size of the audit for you to have the opportunity to actually have a hard copy of that audit available, although it's not really essential for today. And then the other materials, also the audit forms, as well as a whole chapter on the process of and also giving you more of a narrative, more information on how to undergo this process or a refresher for you, all of that information is also found in the book, Reading Assessment in an RTI Framework. That's just one chapter of the book, but it really goes into the details. And, so it would be a nice refresher after you actually do the webinar. For those of you who were not in the webinar, our first webinar that we did a couple 2 weeks ago, you may want to go back and look at the assessment audit webinar one for just a review of some of the terminology that we will be using today. When we met last time, we talked about the purpose of the audit. And so there were multiple purposes that an audit can accomplish. And today we will be focusing on who is doing what and how are they recording that data, how is that data being shared, and also the communication of what do we value. So not only is what people are using important to be revealed, but also the opportunity for everyone to express their voice in why exactly they're doing what they're doing. And this openness and this transparency of giving everybody a voice and having an open forum for this discussion is really a very important part of the process. And particularly for those of you that are in the role of school psychologist, administrator, data manager, or interventionist, or and in a coaching role, some kind of literacy leadership role at your school, we have lots of research to demonstrate that while we certainly need a strong leader with a vision, that top-down mandate is not always the most effective because, as we know, people are going to do what they want to do behind those closed doors. And so what we want to do is create the audit process to create a forum for people really believing that their voice is being heard, but also hearing the values of others in this discussion, so that we have an understanding of exactly why people feel like they want to and need to use particular assessments. Or why they have chosen to not use the data from some others that perhaps may have been mandated. So it's this communication process is really crucial to the assessment audit itself. And then we also want to have an evaluative quality to the assessment audit. Is what we're doing valid and is it reliable? Does it have back from our college classes, all those different kinds of validity that we've talked about, construct validity? Is our assessment measuring what we want it to measure? Consequential validity is, what are the consequences of the assessments that we have chosen? What are the consequences in what instruction looks like? And what are the consequences, perhaps, in lost instructional time? These are all factors that should be weighed in our discussion during our assessment audit. And finally, that reliability. Are the results that we are getting from classroom to classroom reliable? Are the standardized protocols for each of the assessments that we are using, are those standardized formats being followed? Are people reading the data and using that data to inform instruction? So these are some of the questions that we want to be included in this audit process. We don't want to just pass out forms and let people fill out forms and then collect the forms. It really has to have conversation at the grade level, the school level, and if you have decided to do it this at the district level, at the district level. Okay, so now we're going to actually take a look at the audit, and we're going to go through some examples. And so this is the audit. If you have a hard copy, that's fine. If not, you can certainly be using the you can use the handout that you may have just copied for this presentation. And for the examples that we're going to be doing today, that the what you're seeing on your handout is certainly adequate. So I am going to be working through with you. I'll work through and we'll walk through some examples for a first grade audit and what each of the columns might look like if this were to be conducted by a first grade teacher. So let's take a look. So at a first grade audit, for example, if a first grade teacher, and again, the way one would do this is each teacher would conduct, would complete this form individually with the assessments, with every single literacy assessment that he or she is using in their classroom, no matter how formal, no matter how informal, whether mandated or whether it's something that they just believe in and find useful to inform their own instruction. And so, for example, let's say that in the first grade classroom, the first grade teachers use Dibbles. And so I would recommend that you would do each of the subtests individually. That will provide a cleaner picture of what each of those assessments is assessing, and also the time schedule for which it's given, because with these Dibbles assessments or any kind of CBM that you're using, they are done developmentally, so they are not all done three times a year. For example, the phoneme segmentation fluency is done, it's actually, according to Dibbles, the phoneme segmentation fluency is now an option. And so a district, a school or a teacher may be deciding to do it or not do it, or maybe deciding to do as this teacher or this as this teacher is doing twice a year. All right. So this teacher is using the segmentation fluency task twice a year. She's using it in the fall and winter, although that's not indicated there. It is the purposes. For this one, it's measuring the phonological awareness, so there's an X in that construct being assessed. And at her school, they are using it for screening purposes. She is also using it, or the interventionist is using it, for progress monitoring. And so she may be also using that data from the progress monitoring that the interventionist is sharing with her. And then she is also using, well, and so those are the two functions that she is using the Dibbles PSF for. Now, when we look at the training, and we come over here to this last column, okay, in order to do the Dibbles training, she has received the initial training that was an overview, the introduction that probably the entire staff received when the Dibbles was adopted by the school or by the district, and she participated in that initial training. And also at her school, they are using those fidelity script checks that do come with all the Dibbles test materials. And by that, we mean that a peer is coming into her classroom when the test is being given and is periodically, probably at least for once during each administration, is sitting there while she is administering the test and is going through that check sheet that Dibbles provides to ensure that she is administering it correctly and scoring it correctly. So then we go down to the Dibbles nonsense word fluency, and we see that in first grade, they are using that for screening only. And they are using it, however, they're using that three times a year, even though nonsense word fluency now, I do believe also, according to the Dibbles publication materials, is now also optional but this school has opted to use it in fall, winter, and spring as screening only, but they are not using it, and she is not using it, and her interventionist is not using it in any way as a progress monitoring tool. Again, she had the intervention, or again, she had the initial training for that when they adopted Dibbles, and that may have been 3 years ago, but she did have the initial training. And however, this school seems to be very rigorous in wanting to make sure that there's not what Mari Clay calls drift. And so what they do is they do fidelity checks. And there's not information here about how often they have done a fidelity check. They may have only done the fidelity check, you know, when it was first adopted. So this is something, though, that this is why this conversation is so important. This is something that they would actually address in their conversation about how reliable are these results today based on the individual, the initial training that they had this year, last year, 3 years ago. When was that conducted? When were the fidelity checks conducted? And are there booster sessions being provided periodically, say the week before the test is being administered? So now what I would like you to do on your worksheet or on your handout, I would like for you to go ahead and fill out this sheet for the oral reading fluency. Think about how your school in first grade uses the Dibbles oral reading fluency and fill out each of those columns for Dibbles oral reading fluency as you would direct your teachers to fill this out or as you personally would fill it out related to the teachers and classrooms you're responsible for. So take about 2 minutes to go ahead and do that on your worksheet. And here is what it should look like, or here is what it might look like. I won't say should look like, because it might vary in terms of how your school happens to be using this. So with the Dibbles oral reading fluency, typically you would use it for screening, and you would typically use it for progress monitoring in first grade, beginning in winter. Because it is not administered in the fall, it begins being administered in winter and begins and also in the spring. It is a measure of word recognition because the fluency measure, it's word recognition in connected text. Children need to be able to identify the words correctly and accurately in addition to rate. And so it is a word, it could be considered a word recognition measure as well as a fluency measure. And so your school might have done the initial training and might also do fidelity checks, or you may not be doing fidelity checks or have never done a fidelity check. And so in that case, that brings into question whether these results are reliable from classroom to classroom, or from administrator to administrator. Let's look at the next page. In first grade, you might also give a more standardized kind of test. And so something like the Gates-McGinnity or the Terra Nova. And so a test like this that would be administered, and I know a lot of the charter schools continue to give these standardized tests. And so this would be, you know, most of these schools use these tests for screening. They use them also as outcome measures to gauge how the school is doing, how the school is meeting the needs of a particular grade level of children in particular areas. They might also be using, some schools might also use a standardized test like this to see whether or not their other more informal measures and their other measures that they're using have concurrent validity. And the Gates-McGinnity, something like the Gates-McGinnity, is a measure of, it has subtests in it. And so it has subtests in it that assess, oh goodness, Molly, I have just lost the visual.
Okay, Kay, I can advance it to, if you have a hard copy in front of you and you can try to get out and get back in.
I don't have a hard copy in front of me.
Okay. Can you try to get out and get back in?
Do I get out of the screen?
Just the screen. You can't see the screen?
No.
What can't you not see? The PowerPoint?
Oh, wait, now I can't see anything.
Folks, bear with us, okay? We'll get it.
Okay, now I see. Here's what I see. I see the screen, and I see something called Join the Audio Conference. How would you like to join the meeting's audio conference?
Can you cancel out of it?
And it says listen only.
Yeah, so you can click that.
Click that.
You can't get out. Can you get out of that screen? If you can't, then say listen only.
Okay, I'm in listen only mode. But I'm not seeing the presentation.
Okay.
All I see is that RTI logo.
Okay, so you need to close your window, okay, and click on the link again to rejoin. Folks, I'm sorry, we will be right back in the presentation momentarily.
Okay. So I see Adobe Connect.
There you go. You're back.
Okay.
You got to mute your speakers.
All right. So we're back to the Gates-McGinnity. And so this would be used to gauge. Thanks, folks, for being patient. Because this has separate subtests, it has subtests that measure phonological awareness, word recognition, and conceptual vocabulary and comprehension. And so that's only done once a year. A first grade teacher might also be likely to do a more formative assessment for diagnostic purposes, something like the Dolch List, which provides very important recognition about information about word recognition, high frequency words. And so a teacher might use that list in fall, winter, and spring. And there was never any training provided. This is just something that she chooses to use. Or maybe the district even decided that they wanted teachers to use the Dolch words, but had just assumed that everybody knew how to do that. And because it was such a simple, common, formative kind of task, that people could just do it as they saw fit and report a particular number. And so there was no formal training, there's no form of fidelity check, and there's no kind of periodic booster where we're going to see that we're all doing it in a common way and waiting a common, you know, we're all waiting 1 second for a child to say a word. But if they have to decode it, we're scoring it in a different way than if they read it automatically. And we're not allowing 3 seconds and we're not giving clues to the child, but that we are letting the child, we are scoring it correct only if the child read it within 1 second. And so that might be a common test. And then another common test is the Founis and Pinnell Benchmark Kit. And that is a kit that is commonly used in around the nation with kindergarten, first, and second graders. And it is also a more complex test in which children are asked to read a set of leveled little books at particular, a fine gradient of level, a fine range of difficulty readability levels, and they are asked to read that. You get an accuracy score, you get you can score fluency, and there is also a retelling and some questions at the conclusion of it. So I'd like you now to go ahead and fill out the Founis and Pinnell Benchmark Kit and what what constructs does that test? And particularly fill that in a realistic way if that's a test that you use in your district. How are you using that? So many schools, if you look at the top, I've moved this screen around a little bit. So most people who use a Foundas and Pinnell benchmark assessment kit use it for a screening because it does provide a measure of holistic reading skills, of a total kind of reading gauge for children. And so by using it in first grade, we're able to get a sense of children's concepts of print. We are able to identify their word recognition because we do have to take a running record of their oral reading, and we get an accuracy percentage. We also get a fluency. We also can record reading fluency, whether we are using simply for the lower levels, they are just using a prosodic rubric or a rating scale to rate how the child's reading sound in terms of phrasing and expression. For late first grade, beyond level K, they are also doing a words correct per minute for the Foundas and Pinnell kit. And finally, you would have comprehension checked because there's a retelling and there are explicit comprehension, and there are some comprehension questions as well. Many schools also might use this as an outcome measure to determine whether children are achieving at the prescribed benchmark levels at the end of the year, and to see whether their guided reading program is being effective in helping children achieve to the benchmark levels that are recommended by Foundas and Pinnell. Typically, this is given fall, winter, and spring in first grade because the children, the levels, the gradient levels are very refined in first grade. And most people, though, may have only received an initial training. Most schools that I have visited have never done any kind of fidelity checks with peers supporting each other in making sure that there is consistency from classroom one to classroom two. And most schools that I have been in have not done any kind of booster sessions to also ensure consistency every test period. So now what I would like you to do is I would like you to think about one test that your school or your district administers, either in first grade or another grade that you might be responsible for. I saw some people there were second grade teachers, that was not listed, that we did not do together, and take about 3 minutes to jot down your own test and go through the motions of selecting the purpose you use that test for, what constructs are assessed, the frequency of administration, and importantly, what kind of training did the teachers receive and continue to receive for that test. When you are finished doing this, please signal when you are completed. Signal when you're finished. As you're undergoing this process, I'd like you to jot down some questions that might come to mind on your scratch paper or on this form so that you can share those questions or those areas of ambiguity or particular nuances that you were questioning mentally as you undertook this process. And I'd like you to share those at the end of our session today at 5 o'clock when we have time for questions, because I suspect that if you had some questions and some areas of ambiguity, that others might have those same questions. And I'd like a chance to address them. That makes for a rich conversation. We'll take about 30 seconds to allow you to finish up and just jot some questions that you might want to record later. We'll take about another 30 to 40 seconds. Signal when you're finished. Okay, and I think now we'll proceed. So, Molly, you can do that. Okay. So, as you're thinking and as you're working with the teachers in your schools and districts who would be conducting this, you know, who would be filling in these forms and will be having these kinds of conversations, which you will be leading. Some of the things that I think you want to really think about are that when we think about a lean and mean assessment system in literacy, here are the things, the aspects that we need to constantly be comparing to make a tapestry that is woven together. That even within each of those constructs that we were assessing, whether it was word recognition, spelling development, reading fluency, vocabulary comprehension. In literacy, we're constantly thinking, how is the child demonstrating their abilities in this particular area in reading? How are they doing it in writing? What is their competency in isolation? So, for example, in word recognition, are they able to recognize the words in isolation on a list? What does their word recognition look like in connected text? And are they able to do it in writing? Are they able to do it in isolation, say on a spelling test, versus doing it in their writing workshop? And so those are the things that we're constantly looking at so that that we have that balance between reading and writing and being able to do certain things in isolation or doing them in connected text. And so we want to have a full picture. We have to look at all of those things. And then also, the listening and speaking are often considerations within particular constructs, particularly with young children in something like comprehension. In kindergarten, first or second grade, and this is important, in something like comprehension, we cannot make a decision about a child's comprehension unless we have measures of listening comprehension, because they're reading and their word recognition processes are still under construction. And so therefore, if we want to make any kind of important decision about a child's comprehension, we've got to consider listening. Also, with comprehension, we have to consider both writing and speaking in relationship to comprehension, because we can't see into a child's head. And so we need to provide opportunities for children to reflect their comprehension in both speaking and in writing or in some kind of written format. And so these are also considerations in investigating each of these constructs. Now, next, we're going to go through some possible assessments that you might want to be helping teachers jar their memory of what they, you know, what kinds of assessments they are currently using to test each of these constructs. And also, as you move forward in creating your new assessment system, you might want to refer back to these slides to see what are some possibilities of things that you might find to be important ingredients in your assessment system. Molly, I've lost it again. Okay, there I am. I'm back. Okay. So the assessment for reading instruction also has some of these formative kinds of assessments that I'll be sharing for each of the constructs. This is the constructs and the tests that we're going to be talking about today are specific to kindergarten, first and second grade. Some of these tests for children who have developmental delays or who are not who are struggling readers, you may want to back up, and that's why we have third grade listed both on the K-3 and the 3-6 audit webinar schedule, because the assessments on these categories might be just for, you know, are for more typically developing kindergarten, first, and second graders, but might be appropriate for those kids who are struggling readers. So, for example, concepts about print. Some of the kinds of assessments that your teachers might use in kindergarten and first grade to measure concepts, a child's concepts about print, would be the Marie Clay special little booklets for the observation that are part of the observation survey script for concepts about print. I know that reading recovery teachers, if you have reading recovery in your school, the reading recovery teachers use this. And in the McKenna and Stahl book, this is a very important skill in pre-K. You would want to do this in pre-kindergarten. You would want to do this in kindergarten and maybe for children, possibly in first grade, possibly. And in McKenna and Stahl, we have a test called the Book Handling Knowledge Test, which is somewhat abbreviated. That Marie Clay gives a very nice comprehensive picture of a child's concepts about print, but it takes 15 minutes to give. And so it's much more suited to an interventionist in tier three or in special education. It's hard. It would be very difficult for a first grade classroom teacher or a kindergarten classroom teacher to administer that. Whereas using something like the McKenna and Stahl abbreviated form might be something that a classroom teacher in kindergarten and pre-K could use as part of a regular read aloud or some other kind of guided reading procedure. Phonological awareness. There are lots of good measures out that might be available that your school might be using from the very standardized format and school psychologists, who we also want to make sure we want the school psychologists also to be filling out one of these audit forms. So something like the Woodcock-Johnson is going to be likely to show up on that school psychologist audit form. Something like, which is also a nice standardized form, the CTOP test or the TOPA test by Joe Torgerson and his team. Those are standardized, and so they might be something that might show up being done by your special ed teachers, by your tier three teachers, but not much like that. But that might not be likely to be done by a classroom teacher. But those are skill tools that those specialists would want to use and would want to employ to get a more normed picture of this area for children in your kindergarten, first, and second grade. Many schools are going to use one of the CBMs, whether it's Dibbles or Ames Web or FastBridge. Also, phonological awareness, the PALS materials are also commonly used and are very teacher-friendly for a classroom. And it's nice because they're standardized. And so you would be very likely to get a nice standardized implementation of those, but yet they're very classroom-friendly. hearing sounds and words a little, again, that's going to be likely to be used by your reading recovery teacher and maybe used by some classroom teachers. But again, you know, that might be the scoring might be a little more complex for teachers. And then we have, in the McKenna Install book, we have actually made some very specific tasks that are based on the National Reading Panel. And so teachers could just take out a cluster of these. If you're working with pre-K and K, you might just want to do the rhyme tasks, or you might just want to do the blending task. And so those are segmented by specific skills. And so those are some possibilities that classroom teachers are using, or that down the road you might want to insert when you discover any that you might have a void in this area in terms of standardizing the assessment process. High frequency words, a very important skill area for kindergarten, first and second grade. And so again, a school psychologist or a reading interventionist might be using something like the Tower Set by the Torgerson Group. Very important that, it's a very nice step because it is, again, it can be done in 45 seconds for high-frequency words, 45 seconds for nonsense words, and it is normed. That is very important when you're making that decision about Tier 3 or is it time to make the referral for special education. Also, CBMs can be made with through Intervention Central for progress monitoring by classroom teachers, by interventionists. Also, the iReady has some tests of high-frequency words, and many teachers are using the Frylist or the Deutsch List. And one of the things that you want to discuss, are we all using the same list? Are we all formatting it in the same way? Has everyone been trained? Word recognition also includes decoding. And so, again, the Woodcock-Johnson is something that might be used by the school psychologist. The Tower 2, that phonemic decoding nonsense word task, might be something used by the Tier 3 interventionist in making, in informing the decision about whether it is time for referral or not, so that you get some normed results and standardized implementation. I would not advise having classroom teachers use that Tower 2. CBMs, many schools are using CBMs, or some of the more adaptive measures like iReady and STAR provide tests of decoding. Also, you really want some of the reading programs are going to provide some more systematic measures of letter names and sounds. Some programs also might have some kind of decoding inventory that looks at how children's decoding is developing developmentally and will provide particular targets of, yes, this child needs specific practice in the diphthongs or in the digraphs or in short vowel and specific short vowel patterns, specific long vowel patterns, or in connected text. So all of those measures are isolated. Then we also would want to look at some kind of running record of oral reading for children in kindergarten, first grade, early second grade, to see how they are using how they are orchestrating and how they are cross-checking comprehension and the decoding process, and whether they're able to use what they know in isolation in connected text. So just because somebody is using a Foundation's phonics inventory, if they're not measuring their children's and doing an MSV analysis of kids reading connected text through a running record, then there still could be a void in that area because you need both connected text and isolation for decoding. We also want a developmental measure of spelling development. And two of the best ways to really gauge where our young learners are in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, is to administer that Words Their Way spelling inventory or the Word Journey spelling inventory. It doesn't matter whether you use that program for for your phonics instruction. But to use a test like that is a very powerful indicator of what children have under their control in spelling development along a predictable developmental continuum. And it's a nice check for the effectiveness of a program like Foundations or Orton-Gillingham or one of your other spelling programs that you're using. And then we have some standardized measures like a CBM or a Woodcock-Johnson that say a school psychologist might use. Reading fluency. For the youngest children in kindergarten, you might have teachers using these prosodic rating scales. This is an area in which many teachers have not necessarily, many teachers are using these kits and are using these rating scales, but one of the areas that you as during your conversation, you want to talk about how are we ensuring consistency between Mrs. Smith and Mr. Doe? Everybody's probably giving the number one kid that is disfluent. Everybody recognizes a one and everybody recognizes the four. But how are we making sure that we are, if we're giving kids twos and threes on prosody, that we are measuring those twos and threes the same way? Have we, every time the week before we administer the test, are we administering a booster session with anchor listenings? With listening samples of our actual children reading text and creating reliability guides so that we know that our first grade team is rating each of these kids exactly the same. And if we're all rating them differently according to some very abstract or esoteric standard in our heads, then that rating scale that we're using is not reliable. And so if we want to use a rating scale, we've got to invest the time in making sure that we're listening to anchor text or that we're listening to anchor readings, audio tapes of children reading and scoring them and getting reliability gauges among grade level teachers. Same thing with our words correct per minute. We want to make sure that, beyond mid-first grade, we are calculating that words correct per minute. But when I talk about mid-first grade, we're talking about children at that developmental level. We really do want to make sure that we are getting an accurate words correct per minute. Beginning around level H, their children are reading around that mid-first grade level. Vocabulary. Here are many of the possible vocabulary gauges of vocabulary development, going from the more formal and standardized and summative measures like the Peabody, the expressive vocabulary tests, which are likely only used by your school psychologist. Schools should be moving more and more toward common formative measures of vocabulary. Teachers are doing a good job, and they're really working hard to teach vocabulary in some of these new common core units in their disciplinary instruction. So we want to make sure that vocabulary that they are teaching is being assessed. And so if they have a list of words that they are holding children accountable in their plant unit, well, is there an assessment that the teachers as a grade level team have devised to assess that vocabulary? Have they agreed upon vocabulary and are they testing the vocabulary? Vocabulary is the key ingredient in high comprehension scores. It's the key beyond oral reading fluency in K-1 and 2. It's the contributing factor. In kindergarten, first and second grade, that vocabulary contributes to comprehension. So we want to make sure that with our thematic units that we are getting teachers to pay deliberate attention to vocabulary and targeted lists of 15 to 25 words per unit, and that they're teaching those words explicitly and that they're testing them explicitly. Also, we want to make sure there are English learner considerations. And finally, some people may be owning isolated vocabulary programs, and using those as some kind of vocabulary measure, or they may be using the vocabulary measures of a basal reader. Comprehension. This is our most complex area of this is the most complex area of assessment that you want to be looking at, and you really want to have some verbal measures for the young children. You want to have as children get older at the end of second grade, third grade, those kinds of written responses to text. Nowadays, we have some adaptive tests such as FastBridge and iReady that are being used to gauge a lexile range for children. And also things like the CBMs are using the maze or days, or even the oral fluency, the oral reading fluency sometimes uses that, and if you're using their data management system, you have to use that retelling fluency. So these are some of the ways your school may be measuring comprehension. Process writing, you want this to certainly be aligned with a common core. Is the writing that your school is doing, and is it up to date? Is what your teachers are assessing as a team, as a grade level team, again, having that consistency and reliability, so that are they giving periodic common prompts with established rubrics for narrative, expository, and argumentative writing? And finally, motivation. We do have assessments available like the Garfield Elementary Reading Attitude Survey. Typically in kindergarten, first grade, typically these are all going to ceiling out on the positive. These really become more of an issue once we start getting in second grade and above, where that motivation and attitude really does influence children. What the norms on the Garfield the norms show on the Garfield attitude survey show is that most of the children in kindergarten and first grade still have a pretty positive attitude, but this attitude tends to decrease as each year goes by, and particularly though for struggling readers. You know, by the end of first grade and in second grade and certainly in third grade for the struggling readers, we want to take a gauge of that, how the attitude is doing for our struggling readers. So those are a little more examples of some tests that you might be finding in your constructs, or you may want to fill in down the road when you find some voids. Key, again, all voices must be contributing to the audit. We want those examples of what people are doing behind closed doors. We want that exposed for better or worse. And because we want to have the discussions that reveal not only what people are using, but why they are so invested in those things that they are using behind closed doors. There's a reason for the investment. Either they don't believe in, they for some reason believe it's giving them information that they're not getting any other way, or for some reason they believe it's better or different than what the district might have mandated. And so we want this brought into the discussion, because at the end of this process, we want you to have an assessment system that is a lot leaner and meaner than what's going on right now, or a lot more efficient and leaner, but we want everybody buying into it so we can really get rid of all that stuff that people are using on top of what's been mandated by the district. So we want to get rid of that, and we want everybody to really come to a consensus, and it is possible if we at least give people voice. We want to make sure that the school specialists, they use a large range of tests for specific and specialized diagnostic purposes. We want to have those revealed, all right? If the data is important enough to collect, it's important enough to share. So, you know, often in the schools that I'm working in, what I see and hear about is that the interventionist has collected data, but it hasn't been shared, or it's been shared in a way that has not been valued or respected or has not, you know, been given in a way that is teacher friendly in some way. So we want to make sure that if the data is important enough to collect, and not everybody has to collect all data, but if the specialist is collecting it because it's important to informing her instruction, we want to devise some system that's teacher-friendly so that everybody has the information. There has to be transparency. And that brings us to the school realities. Let's be honest. We do not always have time to be chatting, having conferences about the kids, and meeting to have this cohesiveness that we read about in the books, all right? There just isn't time in the school day. And in fact, we may not even have time to read the data on that piece of paper that's in the binder, all right, or someplace. Oh, it's on that pile on my desk under all the other papers. So what our goal is by creating a lean and efficient system that everybody values and that is transparent, that we all know what each other are doing, is that we want to create a streamlined system that incorporates a streamlined data analysis and communication system using technology to help us to our advantage and to the advantage of our children. So the steps moving forward, so in this presentation, you actually get some homework to do because we, I think, will be seeing each other again in April. So some of the steps that you will be participating in our absence, while you're away from me, we're away from each other, you will complete an individual audit form. Or you will get the teachers in your school. If you're a school principal or if you're a literacy coach, you will be doing this with the teachers that you work with. All right? If you're a literacy coach for a second grade team, you and your second grade teachers can do it. If you're working at the school level as a literacy interventionist at the school level or a school principal, you will facilitate this process among each teacher in your school. And then the grade level teams will meet to discuss and to reveal their individual audits. Each grade level team will compile a single grade level audit form that contains all of the assessments that are used at their grade level. And they will also, at the grade level, brainstorm ideas related to obvious grade level assessment redundancies and voids. So they will be sitting there, and once they compile this grade level audit, the redundancies and voids will be revealed, and they will talk about this, and they'll talk about what are the redundancies, what are the voids, and how might they fill them. So at a grade level in K-1 and 2, what do redundancies look like? And these are quotes that I have actually collected from schools that I work in. First of all, classroom teacher and interventionist are doing separate high frequently word lists and word tests and possibly different lists. So now we have the poor kid who's going to intervention. The classroom teacher is teaching him on the Dolch list, and the interventionist turns around and teaches him on the same list. And the two of them are not sharing the list. Or the classroom teacher might be doing some other high-frequency list that she likes. Maybe she's using the Fry list, or maybe she's using something that was in the Faunus and Pinnell kit. And the interventionist is using the Dolch list. So that's a redundancy, all right? And it's a redundancy that's hurting kids because they're being overtested. Another redundancy that I've heard, the district mandates the F&P kit. So I do that for the district record, but really I like the questions on the old DRA that we used to use, so I use that for my own information. This is the kind of thing that needs to be revealed, because if the F&P is not giving you specific enough questions with each of those stories, and the whole reason you're doing it in second grade is to get a comprehension gauge, then this is something that has to be revealed, and we need to make some kind of an adjustment. Next, I also heard this in the school. The district mandates Ames Web, but the McKenna-Walpole differentiation book mentions Dibbles, so that must be better for differentiating my kids. Ames Web and Dibbles are both the same kind of test, and so we really, you know, that would be something that was a redundancy. Here are some voids, all right? Here are some things, here's what a void looks like. There is nothing in the conceptual vocabulary column. Or the kids are retelling in response to the benchmark kits, but there is no consistent scoring guide, and the questions are not specific to the text, nor is any of this administered consistently from teacher to teacher. All right? That's a void. Or another void, my students are not being assessed in how they respond to text in writing. It's only verbal. Okay, and so that is something that particularly in second grade we need to be more cognizant of. So the next steps are that the completed grade level composite, after the grade level composite is completed, the grade level representative would then, if you're doing this at a school level, would attend the school audit meeting. All right. Here are some great examples for your schools to look at. Every single on the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center pilot school on the website, every single pilot school has submitted one of these completed school-wide assessment audit forms. It's very useful to look at these. And you particularly might want to take a look at the Burton School, George Mather Forbes, and Milton Fletcher. Those are very thoughtfully done, and they also did a nice job of looking at some of their redundancies and voids in a very honest kind of way and in a frank way. So our next webinar, folks, will be April 20th. So between now and April 20th, I'd like for you, and I'm hoping that you will have the opportunity to actually take some of what we've talked about in our last two webinars and really put it to work so that when you come back on April 20th, we will be talking about what do you do with all this data that you've collected at your school or at your grade level team. We'll talk more about the pruning, the weeding, and the planting and nurturing your school-wide assessment system and working together to develop a lean, efficient system of assessment that we all believe in and that we all buy into. So we now have some time left for questions, okay? We have time left for questions now. And I hope that you came up with some questions as you were engaging in your own practice of the assessment audit forms. I see some folks typing, so I hope we do have some good questions here. Some questions? Oh, that's a great question, Jill. Outcome measures are done once a year at the end of the year, okay? So an outcome measure, it's really, if you look back at our webinar from our webinar one, you might use the FNP benchmark assessment kit for multiple purposes. You might use it as part of your screening system, all right, along with your CBMs in kindergarten and first grade to see how children are reading connected text. But then your school might use it if it's an outcome measure. Outcome measures are actually only looked at the end of the year as a gauge of how is our school doing? How is our school doing? And so if you're using benchmark levels as an outcome measure, then you are probably looking at the Fountas-Pinel 2012 Progress Monitoring Guide, which says at the end of the year in kindergarten, kids should be at level D. At the end of the year in first grade, kids should be at level J. At the end of the year in second grade, they should be at level M. And so if you're only using it as an outcome measure, you are just comparing where your kids are to that standard, because that's an outcome measure. If you are using it two times a year, if you're using it at the beginning and the end, that sounds more like a screening measure for a pre and post, all right? So it depends on the function. So you may be using it as more of a, if you're using it three times a year, you may be using it as more of a screening measure. In reading recovery, those of you who, you know, in reading recovery, they use the benchmark kit. They, you know, in a reading recovery model, you would be using a running record, though. You may not be using your benchmark kit, but you would be using a running record more systematically in order to progress monitor to make sure that, because if you have a child in first grade who is behind, you do not want to wait until January to find out that he has not moved up to a level, because these levels are very narrow in kindergarten and first grade. So you really want to be monitoring much more frequently. Yes, it was designed to be used three times a year. We do want to see, because we do have benchmarks here of where we do want children, where we want children to be in terms of reading. We want children to be reading connected text at these kinds of levels. So I personally would want to know, and different people have different feelings about whether the F&P should be used as a screener. Different people have different philosophies on that, but my philosophy, and this is the philosophy of Kay Stahl, it's not the philosophy, you know, I can only speak for myself. I personally need to see in a child coming in September, in terms of influencing what the instruction is going to look like, I need to be able to know on a standardized measure that has a standardized directions and that are administered, that's the key, is that it's administered in a standardized way, that this child is reading at a particular text level that is indicated as a benchmark. Yes, you should be having particular benchmark dates, you know, ranges of time. I would say that your DIBELS progress monitoring, so that you would want to use DIBELS progress monitoring. Again, you want to make sure that your folks are administering whatever you're using for progress monitoring, that it's being used in a standardized way. And so you would use the DIBELS for progress monitoring. The oral reading fluency is an excellent gauge of progress monitoring, and it is very sensitive to improvement in your decoding skills, all right? So you would certainly want to do that, and I would think that the classroom teacher, as a classroom teacher, if we are saying that a child is behind or is a struggling reader, then we would want to have running records of that child's reading every week if we are claiming that a child is behind in first grade or in kindergarten. Other questions? Any questions about the booster sessions? Or fidelity checks that are happening in your schools? and how those booster sessions are being conducted in your schools on a regular basis to ensure reliability.
Okay, while we're waiting to see if there are any other questions, I am going to post the link to the survey.
Oh, thank you, Molly, and thank you all for participating. I look forward to getting together on April 20th and going to the next steps of your webinar, of your assessment audit, and please feel free to contact me in the meantime for feedback about how that process is going at your school or if you have some questions. I would love to hear from you in email about your own personal assessment audits that you're conducting. Please feel free to contact me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stahl. We appreciate having you today. We look forward to April 20th. And if you could just hang out for just a minute, I'd appreciate it.
I certainly will.
Oh, I see a question, too.
Okay. Fidelity Checks, the Dibbles does a beautiful job of actually within their materials, within their published materials and on their website, they actually have checklists for every single test with a checklist of particular administrator behaviors. And so what you would do as a teacher is you would work with a partner. And so someone would come in and sit there while you test one or, you know, a couple kids, and they would fill out that check sheet, and then you would do it with your partner. And so they do that. But so it would be a partner teacher that would do it. Or it could be, say, a literacy coach, or it could be, it's nice, though, if it's a partner teacher, because we really want to have this collaborative process that we are doing this together and wanting to be reliable and conduct these assessments in a similar way. And it takes the burden off the literacy coach, and it gives the, you know, peers a chance to observe each other and learn from each other. And so, but for tests that are not Dibbles, I would say that you as grade level teachers would want to make up a fidelity checklist. So let's say you have all agreed on, we're going to do the Dolch list, and we're all going to record it in this same way, on this same form, and we're going to give each child 1 second, and we're going to score it so that it looks this way. And so then you would just put that on a checklist, and then you would partner with each other and see if you are actually doing it the way that you all had agreed upon to do it. Oh, good. Ames Webb. I see there Teresa says Ames Webb also has some nice fidelity checklists. Great.
Okay, I think we're good. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Stahl.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. And I do hope you'll see